Sports Inc. Tech Show.
Good evening, and welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show, March 10th, 2004. Oh yeah! Before we get started, as always, we're going to play our reduced, for your entertainment pleasure, promo.
Are we?
No longer 10 minutes, unless you lost the reduced one.
No, I got it.
I got to tone it down a little bit. The boss man says, lower.
By the way, while you're listening
to
this
thing... Hi, folks, this is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or, maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or, just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
All right. See? Shorter promo. Everybody happy.
Woo-hoo.
I see our IRC is packed with Alan and Link and Dan.
A whole lot of people tonight.
And Root.
This is going to be a ringer of a show, I can tell right now.
Root has joined.
Root has joined, really?
Root.
Hey.
Hey, hello, Root.
Hey, Root.
Root.
Just for your information, Root, it is generally accepted as bad form and practice for you to join as Root. For you to join an IRC chat as Root, but...
Well, what are you going to do? At least somebody else is there. We shouldn't complain.
Yeah, right.
Thank you for joining us, Root.
Welcome aboard, right?
Yeah. By the way, that was my friend and co-host, Link Fezzanen, chiming in there with his opinion.
Yeah, my opinion. Cohort is more like it, I guess.
Yes. And then Master Alan back there.
Hello, all.
Who's fiddling with his laptop. And, well, Root is Moondog, or Moondog is Root. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the shorter promo. For those people downloading, we'll hit some news.
It's no more time to go and get, like, a beer or anything now.
Yeah. Can't hit the facility. Well, some news... I want to talk about something, but it's kind of news, so I'm going to save my news for a little bit towards the end of the news, and I'll let Alan start with news this week.
Starting with news. I saw this one was like for all the people who claim never to have enough space. That Hitachi has created a hard drive that's 400 gigabytes. They don't have a price for it, I think. 400 gigabytes and 3.5 inch in a 3.5 inch form factor. 7,200 RPMs. No price, which basically means I can't afford it. But for all those people who are, storage junkies, that ought to do really nice for them.
That is awesome.
Dan's going to rush out and buy one for the computers here. I know that.
You know what I would like to say?
400 gig hard drive, 3-inch
form
factor has got to be... A hefty little sum there.
I can't wait till they're making those little postage stamp sized drives now, actual hard disks. Like you can fit a gig or something like that, or four
oh,
gig or
like
10
the,
gig or
the
something
gig on
like that.
On like the,
yeah, the size of a postage stamp it is. And they're manufacturing now those things in an effort to, I guess they're gonna want to start putting them in like little handheld.
I guess
game
so, yeah, they're going for the handhelds
like
and for like the cameras and stuff.
Now, if they can get like a gig on the size of a postage stamp, and really they're not a whole lot thicker than that either, you know. If they can do that, then we have got some seriously cool stuff coming out as far as drive space goes on. And I can't wait to see it. That's going to be really awesome.
Seriously cool, and then 4 years later, it comes down to seriously reasonable.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's also, I've read somewhere, I think it's where they're taking apart the new mini iPod for the drive in there and stuffing it into like one of the cameras. And I can't remember. I have to look it up where I saw it on. But it's because you know the same drive for the camera is like $500.
Wow.
And for the iPod it's $249 I think for the mini. So they strip out the hard drive for it and put it into their cameras.
Cool.
Which I think was really neat. I don't know how they do it, but I'd have to find the article again. But it just sounded neat. So that's what I got. Unless you want to hear about the, for anybody with a Citrino, that IBM, or excuse me, yeah, they're starting to put out the wireless package for the Citrinos now. There's a package over on SourceForge for that. So if you know anybody with a Citrino who can't get wireless working, this may help them out.
You have a Citrino?
No, can't afford one.
Well, you know, just think, Link, in about 15 years, you'll have a Citrino.
Yeah.
You'll pick them up out of somebody's garbage can or something.
I can afford one. Go ahead, pick on me because, you know, I have to use garbage computers to get my stuff done. But, you know.
It works,
I have
though.
It
does work.
Even with garbage computers, I have a formidable home network. But
the giant racks of Link.
Oh, dude. Even when the fastest machine that I have right now is 950 megahertz AMD Duron, and you know it does everything I need. It probably would be the only thing I could think of to make it a lot better would be to get like a really good video card for it, because I think my video is a little slow. It's one of those. You know, it's onboard video, and it's a shared memory kind of video thing.
Oh, yes.
And it just is a little bit slow, almost enough to annoy me, but not really, because I don't do a lot of gaming or anything on it. So that's one thing. I bet if I upgraded that to, like, some nice, you know, 32 or 64 meg AGP card that was supported real well, it would fly, man. It would just take right off and I would be completely happy with it. But I'm more than happy with it now. And the rest of my stuff is like, you know, I'm a collector of cool computer stuff. So, and even though I have...
And also computers that you can make in end tables, too.
Yeah, so any computers you can make in end tables. But I'm not going to say that I don't have, like, several PCs on my home network, because I do. Why? Because they're economical to find. You know, if somebody happens to be throwing away a 400 megahertz Pentium computer because they have to upgrade to the newest 2.4 gigahertz, you know, monster machine so that they can play Network Doom or Quake or whatever, I will happily take
that. Or just run Windows.
Yeah, or just run Windows, or you know, because you have to upgrade to 2.4 gigahertz in order to get XP to boot, I hear. I'm happy to take that, you know, 400 megahertz machine or whatever off of their hands and slap it on my network. You know, in fact, I have one running my web server.
What, 400?
Yeah, 400. Yeah, it's a familiar-looking 400. And in fact, I think we gave one of them away. But it's running my web server. Runs really, really great. I know there's an identical one that runs the web services over at the Linux Link. And that
also, runs the show, too.
Yeah, it runs the show, and it happens to run just fine, man. You would never know that it's not a 2.4 gigahertz computer. And you know, I have another one that's pretty similar that runs my backup server at home. You know, a couple big drives hang off of that, and it works just fine. You don't need to have, the fastest computer in the world in order to run the services on it that you want to run on it. I'm completely happy with that. And then you get into the weird hardware that I really like, because there are a lot of architectures, processor architectures out there that are infinitely better at doing what they do than the Intel architecture or x86 architecture. For instance, I run Spark stations, like Spark 20s and Spark 10s, and I have some VAXs, which may be a lot slower than your average desktop or workstation type of PC at this point in time, but they can do, they handle multiple processes so much better than x86. It's not even funny. So it's not really a matter of just, the number of megahertz that you can get out of your processor. It's what you can do. It's what the processor
can do with what it has.
Same thing with PPC architecture. And for you, those of you who don't know, that's like Macintosh architecture, right? The Macintosh Power Computing architecture. And you really have that type of processor architecture really performs much better than its x86 counterpart. That's why you'll see there's a lot of Mac people out there. Mac people are like fanatical, you know what I mean? But they truly have a reason to if they're talking about the architecture, because I have seen 400 megahertz Macintoshes outperform gigahertz plus Pentium PCs. Hands down, just smoke pouring out the back of their butt. They just give them a whomping, you know what I mean?
I was thinking digging around on eBay and getting like the Ethernet card for some of those SE30s that I have.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the hell of it.
Something fun to play with, man.
There's not too many. I mean, I see them every once in a while on eBay when I'm scanning around, but I haven't gotten around to buying one yet for it. Just because I'm not sure exactly what I would do with it, but...
Well, what you could do with it, and one thing that I used to use a couple of old Macs for, is old Macintoshes, if you can get them to run, I can't even remember the application now, there's a couple of really good terminal apps out there.
Okay.
Free ones that you can get and run them, and they make awesome X terminals. You know what I mean? Or just a terminal that you can tell them at any other system from or something like that.
Actually, I think I may have, I have one for the laptop that I have. I'm trying to remember what the name of it is.
Yeah, and they just, they have the Macintosh is like, they have a nice feel to them, even the old ones. You know what I mean? They're kind of nice feel.
We were using it in conjunction with that X-Server software.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the name of that either, because I haven't used it in quite a while.
MIX?
Yeah, that was it.
It's good stuff. And the old Macintoshes and stuff, like I said, they have a nice feel. The reason they have a nice feel is because they are, Apple makes computers with a much higher quality to it than your average, Taiwanese PC maker that's trying to grind them out in a rice paddy somewhere or something like that. You know what I mean? They really are.
The guy at the computer show with the drill gun.
Exactly.
Putting the screws in.
Exactly right. The Apples are made to a much higher standard, and that's why they are so much more expensive. But even at that, them being more expensive, that they really do last longer, and they're more, they're more rugged, and they have a more solid look and feel to them and stuff like that. So it's fun to use, some of the old stuff to play around with. Plus, as far as using old computers, there is nothing wrong with keeping some old computers around if they do what you want them to do.
Yeah, if they're working and they do exactly what you don't need to buy new ones.
Sure, well, a lot of people that tell me that, they must go out and buy the brand newest thing on the market and the hottest thing because they want to be able, and they'll go out and they'll get this monster PC, and they'll put hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stuff and software into it.
Microsoft and software.
Yeah. And you know what they do with it? They bring it home and they run Word on it. They write letters. They send emails.
Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Outlook Express.
Yeah. They write letters. They send emails. And they listen to, occasionally they listen to some music. And they browse the internet. Now, why do you have to spend $4,000 on a computer to do that? Like, you can go through a junk pile and get something that'll do that.
That'll do that for you, yeah.
And, you know, you can spend nothing on it. But that's, I see a lot of that thinking prevailing through society today. So,
but then again, it comes back to, you also need all that speed to run XP now, too. You can run XP on.
Yeah, but you don't need that. You know what I mean? You don't need to have XP to do that stuff.
No,
like,
you don't.
If someone
need to do
could buy a $25 old beat up Macintosh that has, you know, that has Explorer 5 on it or something, and it has Outlook on it, and it has, you know, well, it has Explorer 5 and Outlook on it. There you go. They can write their emails, and they can browse the web, and, you know, chances are really good that they can plug a pair of speakers into it somewhere and listen to a CD or MP3 file or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's doing it. That has exactly the same functionality for $25 or less.
And if they do it that way, chances are they won't be running a virus either.
Sure. Sure, yeah, right. You know, get your Microsoft VB viruses and try and run them through a 10 or 12-year-old Macintosh. But anyway.
We digress. It's Dan's turn.
I've blabbed enough.
People, or I should say specifically your wife, is having problems.
Having problems. Keeping a connection. But I'm not hearing anything from anybody else. So I'm just curious if it's just on you. You had said earlier that you were having a problem connecting to work. From your house?
I know, well,
from
sorry,
my house?
Slow connection for me just connecting to my house.
Right.
It was.
So, I don't know if that has anything to do with what's going on. But she keeps getting dropped.
Might be, you know, one of our wonderful fans over there trying desperately to download an older version of the show, too.
Now, why would they be trying to download an older version when they can listen to the brand new live version?
Live.
In fact, if you were listening last week, the hour before the show, you could have heard some really interesting stuff because we didn't know the microphone was on.
Thankfully, I'm still alive.
That was a whole lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I should do that again sometime. All right.
Now did you leave the mics live like all last week?
No.
it's just the hour before the show.
Just forget what I was doing. I don't even know why I had it live. Who knows? It could have been live all week for all I know. I don't think it was. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Well, anyway, I'll bring up my news. I'm pregnant.
All right, we're going to make some money off of this one.
No. Yesterday I had the opportunity to go to a Microsoft TechNet event at the Regal Cinemas in Easton. Or, what is that, the Easton Shopping Center? No.
North Hampton's Crossing.
The Regal Theater in there. And, you know, for starters, it's nice and comfortable to have a meeting in there, but it's really hard to stay awake. Especially when it's nice and warm and it's 8 o'clock in the morning and they're talking about
nice comfortable seats that lean back and
yeah, and I'm having to listen to Active Directory. But the main reason I went was because I needed, you know, I wanted to hear what they had to say in their second session, which was managing security patches and updates with their services. And I got to sit through the first part of the presenter's speech. And the presenter was pretty good. She was a nice person. Funny. She knew her stuff pretty well. But she started off the security. And Microsoft has three points that they're trying to make now. Security by design. Security by the second D. Well, the third D is deployment. Security by design, security by something, and security by deployment. Security by distribution, I think it is. And what ends up happening is, now what they said is, no matter what they do, there's always going to be holes in the software, no matter what. So they said, yeah, they're trying to create a more secure design, but then she turned around and said, don't really expect it to ever happen. In one sense.
We can do better, but it's just not going to happen.
So now, what I was able to do was listen to their speech, and then I conferred with a colleague at work, Jen, who's actually on the Joe, who's on the chat tonight, which is nice to see her there. But there's two services that they offer. One's called Software Update Services, and the other one is Software Management Services. Now,
you forget about the third service. This is Microsoft you're talking about, right?
Right.
Their third service?
FDisk?
No.
Nopix.
Their third service is stealing the money from your wallet.
I'm talking about security patch management. Okay.
Well, that kind of works in with it, too, you know?
Well, security patch management, you're right, stealing the money. But no, we're going to get to that, because there is a whole element of stealing the money out of your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these tools, while they are available now, are being revamped. Now, security updates, software update services, or SUS, is a part of software management system, which is SMS. Not server messaging system, software management system, or server, I think it is. Now, there's another one, there's a utility, as a baseline or something like that, which will go out and query machines. But anyway, these are ways for you to manage your Windows 2000 XP workstations so that you'll be able to update them, keep them up to date on your schedule, not Microsoft's. So, you know, right now, you typically run Windows Update.
Once a month.
Well, they send it. Well, they said, they kept emphasizing how they want to only release on, like, once a month.
You have to run Windows Update once a virus, which is pretty much once a day, right?
Right.
Didn't they just come out with one yesterday for it as well?
An update?
I think there was an update yesterday.
That's possible. I don't know. But anyway, they're trying to do two things. One is reduce the number of updates, and the other is shrink the size of the updates. All right. So now, anyway, getting back to SUS and SMS. SUS is a component of SMS. Now, SMS itself runs about $1,500 for the server, and then you need a SQL server and an IIS server running, and you will also need to pay per client charge to run the software management services, which essentially allows you to make sure that all your workstations are up to date with all the patches. Now, it's not just Windows patches. They're also starting to incorporate Office and other third-party applications.
Okay, but with all of those requirements, do they provide you with a tub of Vaseline, or do they just like to pump you dry?
Well, that's what I thought. You know, I was going to the TechNet thing, hoping to find some really good information, because it's a nightmare with patch management where we work, particularly because of the systems, the way that they operate, and we run go back for replacing them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just such a nightmare. Anyway, the SUS service apparently doesn't cost anything. But again, it only works for Windows 2000 and XP and maybe NT4. And you need to run it off a Windows server, which allow you to configure all your workstations to just go to that SUS server. And then have them download the patch when you're ready, after you do some testing. Because everybody always downloads and tests their patches before they deploy them from Microsoft's operating system. Right, Link?
Oh, absolutely.
So, I was kind of disappointed at the services they had to offer. And what, you know what else is even more annoying? Like, if I want to go out and I need to get a Slackware patch or a Red Hat patch or a SUSE patch, FTP, or go to the website and go through the FTP interface on the website, or HTTP, I could download the patches. Apple, I can kind of do the same thing. Microsoft does not allow you to connect to their update service on anything but a Windows machine. Unless there's some backdoor ways to get in there, but they're not as evident as downloading software for other operating systems.
They don't make it easy.
They do not. And even what makes it even harder is all their patches are labeled with some funky number, like Q1X2345B.
Yeah.
All right. And that was brought up at the Technet. They're like, well, why can't, you know, if you want to go remove a patch that you applied and it's funky, you got to figure out what the patch is because it's in there by a Q number.
It in English.
Yeah, and you know what their response was? Well, just go to Microsoft's website and look it up in the search under the knowledge base. That'll tell you what the patch is. But you know,
their Windows update doesn't tell you what the patch is.
No, it doesn't.
It's just basically a number on there, and a number with a paragraph that says you'll have to reboot after this patch installs. Because this is a critical patch. And they'll put like one line in there, which doesn't make any sense unless you've read that whole knowledge base article, and a line that says you'll have to reboot after this patch is installed. You can never figure out what it is, anyways. Even when they do put it in English.
Well, anyway, they're trying to reduce the number of reboots too. But if you're running Windows 98, you're screwed, or ME, or as they call it, Windows ME.
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 Me. It's a nice me.
Me, 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 me. So I wasn't too happy with the update services. Now at work, again, when I spoke to Joe about this, she said that she's going to start looking into using Norton's Ghost, which has a client utility that would allow you to hook into the operating system, or actually the workstation, to be more specific, and you can apply patches or like snapshots of applications you can create and just slip them on in there. And again, but the biggest problem we have is GoBack. And now, I don't know, you guys are familiar with what GoBack is, right?
Right.
I've heard you talk about it, yeah.
You know, it's a choice. Do we run without GoBack, and then if a machine gets messed up, we have to image it, and we're almost there with being able to image it really relatively fast, but or have to figure out what's wrong with it. You just hit GoBack, and go back, revert to another time. But then, when you revert, you lose all the patches and antivirus updates. And any time we need to go install a piece of software or something, we got to disable go back, install the software, get it all set up, re-enable go back. And sometimes it takes an hour for go back to re-enable itself. So it takes an incredible long time.
Why does it take an hour?
It goes through all this stuff and it sets up the buffer. And for some reason, when we do ghosting on a Windows XP machine and re-enable go back, or even on a 98 machine, particularly with those that have been ghosted, it sometimes takes an hour for that buffer to get created.
Hmm. That's weird.
It's a big pain in the butt.
That's horrible.
It is horrible. And you know what's even funkier? We have machines, and I brought this up last year, Windows 98 machines in the elementary schools that all of a sudden one day lose all their settings. It's like the registry got wiped out. All the stuff is still there. The drivers are all there, but nothing set up in the registry. It comes up with, like, it looks like it's in safe mode, but it's not. It's like the first time you reboot without any software or drivers installed. We can't figure out why it's happening, and sometimes you can't even get go back to revert and restore it. So it's like, how does that happen?
Now, what do you, instead of go back, what are you using to do your images, your imaging, you know what I mean?
Well, we've been using Ghost, Norton's Ghost. And now, again, like I said, Joe just set up a Ghost server, which supposedly she says she's getting an image blasted out from the server in 15 minutes to a workstation, which is nice. We've been talking about having that for a long time, and finally it's coming around. But wouldn't have to use it if it was running Linux. And then I guess...
No, well, that's what I was going to say, you know, because one of the Linux is so cool, man. One of the coolest things that I have done at my work, where I have to use NT4, we have a bunch of NT4 computers on the floor, and they're really old and sucky, you know what I mean? And the people there hose them all up, you know, putting stuff on them, and I'll have to re-image one. And instead of using Ghost, because my company also is cheap and doesn't want to buy any, you know, anything at all, including my salary. But anyway, they didn't want to do anything like that, so I used Linux instead. And I figured, you know, what the hell? I just use it. So I set up a directory on a server, and a Samba. I don't know. Was it Samba or NFS? It might have been NFS. Anyway, I set it up on a server, and I took one of those workstations, and I did a copy all. Like, I put Tom's Root Boot. That was the disk. It's a one floppy disk Linux distribution. I love this thing. It's awesome. It's network ready in the whole bit. I put it into the workstation, loaded up Tom's Root Boot, this version of Linux, and then I mounted the hard drive up, and I did a copy all from this Tom's Root Boot into this NFS directory, I think I did. That copied every file on Windows, right? So now, when these things get hosed up, all I do is simply walk over to the computer, and I format the hard drive. You know, right through Windows, just shut it down, bring it through the format thing. As soon as the thing is formatted, then I just slap in the Tom's Root Boot, and I run the copy all backwards and copy everything back onto the drive, and pow, it's up.
It's up and running. It's full.
It's like it like Dan was like a 10 or 15 minute thing. It's awesome. It's the way to be, dude.
Yeah, the way to be. Now, how much the data?
It's not much. It's like 500 megabyte. The whole drive is 500 megs, and they probably, you know, it's only about 200, half of that maybe.
Yeah. Now, did you say you compressed it, or no?
No, I didn't. As a matter of fact, compress
it straight.
It's just a straight, as fast as you can hump it through the network, kind of thing, you know. Because that, you know, if you compress it, that's all fine and great. When you compress it and you're storing it all compressed, that's great. But in order for you to put it back on a hard drive, you've got to decompress it. And these computers that I'm putting it on are like P90s. So, you know, can you imagine sucking that stuff over and then trying to decompress it and put it out? It would be like an 8-hour job. So pretty much I just do a straight thing and I copy back and forth and it's, you know, bang, 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 and it's all done. It's cool.
You know what? We hit the 9:30 mark. That's intermission time. You firing up a song there, big boy?
I'm looking for one now. One that we haven't done. Have we done?
No.
Did we do last?
Doesn't
week?
Matter. Play
did we
it again.
Do Maritime Girl last week? Maritime Girl EP? That was a couple weeks ago.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Civil War, maybe, huh? Let's listen to Civil War, shall we?
Is that the Guns N' Roses version?
I don't know if it is or not.
I don't need.
But anyway, what we're listening to here is going to be a song called Civil War, and we'll catch.
This ain't
cool
about war anyway. Fight! 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 Fight!
Whoa! Yeah. We missed that one, didn't we?
Good job, Mr. Fezzadin.
Hey.
Way to be on the ball there.
Give me a break.
Now you know what it's like.
Yeah, but at least they didn't have it on repeat again. You know what I mean? So it just kept going over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't play the other promo.
What Dan said. Oh, we didn't play Dan's part of the promo. Oh, my goodness.
Now I'm going to cry.
We're all going to treat for now.
I'll play it over here and I'll crash the damn thing.
Yeah, don't do that because you play.
Funny.
But this is what we'll do. We'll put it in right now.
In here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints?
Complaints.
Like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LVLUG member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. For those to the east, there is the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. That is still too long.
That never ends.
That's like
the never ending.
Welcome to the intermission. We don't want you to come back long. That's way too long. Oh.
Well, we can work. We should do. You know.
I gotta admit, I wanted to
do some
a,
different stuff anyway.
I wanted to do a new promo tonight, but I got involved in other things. Man, your phone's going off like crazy.
Going off, man.
Maybe you better answer that next time.
I probably should answer it now.
Man, why don't you get out of here and answer that phone?
And Link has to take a short intermission here, I guess.
Now we'll get to talk about some real things without unnecessary interruptions.
Unnecessary.
Alan, what were you going to say?
Unnecessary interruptions, yes.
I mean, you had something to talk about, right?
No, we were still on your stuff.
We were still on my stuff.
I was pretty much gone. I had a long week so far, so...
I'm pretty much done with that Microsoft stuff. It's been a mind-numbing week. That TechNet thing was long and boring.
Well, it sounds like, especially you reclining chairs, like you were saying, it was a lovely day out. Well, sort of.
Well, it was snowing.
Well, it's a lovely day to me. I don't mind snow.
Oh, man. But anyway, the worst part is I got there a little late, and I ended up sitting all the way down in the front. So, you know, there's a presenter right in front of me. It's like, oh, my God. If only I could just close my eyes, but then they'll see me. At the end, I got a nice little...
I was going to ask you, did you get any good swag?
Yes, I did, actually. They gave a Microsoft bag and stuff, and I was like, I'm not going to be caught dead carrying this thing around or whatever. And I figured, well, I could take it to the lug meeting, and we could deface it and tear it apart, but... That wouldn't be nice. So I gave it to Joe at work. Left it on her desk. Peddle it off onto her.
So she's the one going to get abused now.
She's the Microsoft giant.
Ah, okay.
Let it be. Yeah.
I saw an article earlier where the Army has told Microsoft to stop sending free copies of Word to the the people in the Department of Defense.
Yeah, they're not allowed to use it.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, I heard the military says
$500, and you know, we'll give it to you for free. So, like, a little shady there, I think.
Yeah, we'll give it to you for free.
Just keep that Linux out.
Just come on over here. Look, we'll give this to you for free, and we won't charge you for an upgrade until next year.
Until next year.
Next year. And if you want us to help you manage the security patches,
we're going to charge you some more.
It'll cost you another $60 a client. Come on in. It's better
trusted
over here.
Computing.
Trustworthy computing.
Or trustworthy, I'm sorry. I thought
trustworthy
it was trustworthy
computing. See, you can't put the slogan right, so you're obviously not into the trustworthy computing.
Well, I'm not into Microsoft, so it sort of helps. I mean, like I said, I'm stuck using it at work. But, you know,
you know what else they kept saying yesterday? They said, your network is only as secure as you can trust your network administrator. That's how secure it is. So how well you can trust your network administrator is how secure your network would be. And my question I wanted to ask them was, by that analogy or by that statement, nobody trusts Microsoft. So how can we trust any security
that you're giving up?
Advice, techniques, or any patches from you? Nobody trusts you. Why? You know, by your statement saying that your network is only secure as you trust, as trustworthy as your administrator is, your network administrator. Come on. Nobody trusts them. Which means to say, they're saying basically,
don't trust us.
If you don't trust the person, your network's not going to be secure. Well, nobody trusts Microsoft. We don't trust Microsoft. So Microsoft products are never going to be secure. So trustworthy computing's a fallacy.
Yeah, but it's a fallacy that's going to sell them more computers, though, I think.
But they are up front blatantly telling you, ain't going to happen. It's not going to be secure. Come on, Alan. I know you want to chime in.
I'm at a loss for words for that. So.
Your network is only as secure to the extent that you can trust your system administrator. Now, they said it a little more eloquently like that, but they said, if you can't trust your system administrator, your network is not secure. Did you hear that, Link?
Yeah.
You're coming back in. At the TechNet meeting yesterday, they said that your network is secure, is secure to the point of how much you can trust your network administrator. So if you can't trust your network administrator, if your network administrator is not a trustworthy person, your network is not secure.
If your network administrator is not a trustworthy person.
So basically, if you don't trust your network administrator, then your network isn't secure. Now, Microsoft, nobody trusts them, which means their network isn't secure. Their products aren't secure.
I can go
their
with
patches
that, yeah.
won't be secure.
Mm-hmm.
By their own comparison, their mm-hmm. statement, they said, if your network administrator is not trustworthy, your network will not be secure.
Absolutely.
Thus, if your network software and the person providing you with this security advice is not trustworthy, your network will not be secure.
Absolutely.
Thus, Microsoft not trustworthy. Microsoft network not secure.
Sure. I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's one problem with that. I'm not saying it's not true. It is absolutely true. The problem with that is the only people who realize that the Microsoft security example doesn't work are technical people. Now, the suits, and you know who you are, if you go, you know, to work every day wearing one of them, you know, brain chokers, the suits, however, have this opinion that Microsoft is a wonderful thing, so therefore, by default, they
no
trust
one
their...
No fired for, yeah, for
they,
buying Microsoft.
That's right. They trust their administrator. They trust Microsoft, so Microsoft must be secure. And that's the problem, you know, as I see it. And now the technical people who know better know better, you know, and it's a non-issue. But I wish it were otherwise, but Microsoft has this security by obscurity thing going on, you know? And the obscurity that I'm talking about is they hide the fact that their software really stinks from all the Office administrators who, for some reason, have the ability to make purchasing decisions about technical issues that they know nothing about. But that, my friends, is a different rant.
They showed another slide yesterday about how the whole process of bugs and exploits. And this is what they said.
Okay.
This is how it works. Okay? Microsoft finds a bug and acknowledges the bug. Then that starts a race between Microsoft to patch the bug and crackers to exploit the bug. Thus...
Wait, I missed that one.
Microsoft... Microsoft,
let's revisit that for a moment.
Microsoft finds a bug or a possible exploit.
Okay.
Acknowledges the possible exploit. Then there is a race between Microsoft to fix the bug or the exploit and crackers to exploit the bug or the exploit.
This is what Microsoft said?
This is what Microsoft said.
Are they kidding?
So then they say they release a patch, and then the crackers reverse engineer the patch to find the exploits and put another exploit out against the patch.
This was on like Slashdot or something like that. They were saying that they think that their stuff is so buggy because they release patches and people reverse engineer them to get bugs out of them.
But what about the fact that like they sit on known exploits for 6 months at a time?
No. Those exploits are not known until Microsoft acknowledges them. Then...
Oh, so they... unless Microsoft says they exist, they don't actually exist. It's a figment of our imagination.
The problem is it becomes a race. When Microsoft acknowledges the exploit, there's a race between the crackers who are going to crack the code and Microsoft to fix a patch for the code.
So the
crackers don't start until Microsoft acknowledges it.
It's been out for 6 months before they even get to acknowledging it, though.
Yeah, all the crackers, therefore, are just sitting on their laurels waiting with bated breath. Oh, my goodness. Is Microsoft going to tell me about an exploit today that I can code on? Oh, man.
That's what they're waiting for, right?
Yes. Now,
Quick, wait. Microsoft is going to tell us about another exploit.
I kind of thought that, too. I didn't understand that.
Give me a break.
Microsoft acknowledges a bug. There's the race. A patch is released. And then it's another race for Microsoft to find bugs in the patch before a patch is reverse engineered for exploits. You know, I don't think so.
I can see that patches could
be reverse engineered.
Yeah, that's understandable, but...
I do not buy it.
Most of their bugs are out there for several weeks to several months before Microsoft even bothers to say, oh, yeah, we realize that's a patch.
Oh, at least.
We need to fix that.
Here's the thing, though. Now, this conference you were at, was this like a thing with a whole bunch of suits there, or was there actually some technical people there?
Technical people. This was all technical people.
So, like, when they came up with this slide that says this, did you hear like any bullshit kind of thing in the audience, or were they like buying into it, or were they all sleeping at that point?
It was like a room full of happy Microsoft people.
Oh.
All right? That's what I felt.
Zombies.
Because nobody... And I should... I wanted to question...
Microsoft Media Zombies. Oh, look at the pretty picture. Oh.
I wanted to question, but I punked out.
I
was half asleep, and then I'm like, should I point out that...
I could just see Dan up there wielding this NOPIC CD. No!
Let the power of NOPIX compel you.
Dominus NOPIX.
Big flames come out of the compact laptops they had there. But you know what? This was great. I don't think anybody caught this, okay? This was great because I was sitting right up front. The presenter had two laptops and a separate display, and she was doing a PowerPoint presentation from one, and she was running virtual PC from the other, multiple sessions, and she was bringing it up during one of the breaks, and she said, "Oh, it found a virus." There's a virus there. And I'm like, oh my God. That's not good.
It's like at your own meeting.
Yeah, this is. Oh, how did a virus get on there? Want to borrow my Nothix disk?
I hope you at least, like, blew gas at this woman or something, you know?
You know, she was a really good presenter. She was a nice person, but man, you know, just the double talk and. The lies. An exploit doesn't occur until Microsoft acknowledges it. And speaking of that...
I can't believe nobody said anything, because that is like the most ludicrous thing I have ever heard from
and
a
you
Microsoft
know what?
Person. You know?
I want to find, because you can get on Microsoft's TechNet, and you can actually see the PowerPoint slides. And maybe I'll go look for that in just a minute, if they'll let me get on with a non-Microsoft OS.
We'll have to
OS.
Convert them to, like, you know, Open Office or something.
Anyway, it was just such a... There was an interesting article on NewsForge. It was an interview with a guy who has been running around on the ScriptKitty IRCs. Did you guys see that article?
I browsed over. I didn't get to read the whole thing.
Now, that guy on there was saying that the exploit for the RPC DOM problem was out a month before Microsoft even acknowledged it.
Oh, it was way before that, because he was talking about, if you read the article at all, and you guys out there, he was talking about things called zero-day exploits. And what that is, what a zero-day exploit is, for those of you who are not in the biz, is an exploit that's known about but not released to anybody. And there are different kinds of zero-day exploits. There are zero-day exploits that are zero-day exploits known only to Microsoft about their own operating systems. And those are bad enough. Because eventually, you know, what happens is that exploit leaks out to the hackers, cracker community, and you know, it gets exploited. Or someone finds it through trial and error or something like that. The worst ones are the zero-day exploits that are only known to the crackers who hang out in these IRC channels. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the company that put out the software doesn't even know there's a problem. But these crackers know about it, and they play with it. Back and forth for months and months on end before anybody sees it, you know. And those are the bad ones. So thankfully, the vast majority of that kind of activity is done against Microsoft products. So, and that's in all seriousness, you know. And I've heard a lot of this bantering back and forth lately about, well, yes, there are viruses out for Linux too. And or OS X, their virus is out, and you can do that. And the more desktops you have that run OS X or Linux or whatever other operating system, the more desktops you have running that, the more viruses will be made for that. And that is true to a point. The point that I'm trying to make, though, is that the viruses for a Unix system has to be a completely different creature. Because if you are not running your Unix system as a root operator, and generally speaking, you don't do that, right? That's not like an acceptable practice. If you don't run your system as the root operator, when you get hit with that virus, the only thing it can do is screw up the stuff for your particular user. Which, you know, doesn't hose your system, and many times doesn't, you know, has no way to destroy mass volumes of your data or anything else.
By the same token, there are rootkits out there.
Yeah, but if we're talking about a virus and a rootkit are two different things.
That's
a rootkit is a worm.
Yeah.
You know? If we're talking about viruses, like you open your email, like if you're in Windows for some reason assumes that every person that sits in front of the keyboard is indeed the owner of that machine and should be able to do
an idiot.
Yeah, should be able to do whatever they want to do. Therefore, if you get a virus in your email that says erase the hard drive, well, Microsoft says since you're sitting at the keyboard, you must indeed have permission to erase your entire hard drive. So it just, you know, blindly goes and does it. On Linux, if for some chance, first of all, you can't run VBasic viruses and things like that on Linux, and it's very hard to script like a macro virus for Linux because there are bazillion different kinds of email programs, and like myself, I use a text program. How are you going to, you know, script something for that? But anyway, if you're at Linux, and like I'm sitting on my user account on Linux, even if they said go to root and erase everything there, the only thing that would happen is I would get an error. I would get a permission error. I don't have permission to do that because I am not, you know, the all-time owner of the computer, whether I'm sitting at the keyboard in front of it or not, you know. I'm not logged in that way. That's the major problem with that. And the worms and stuff like that, that's a different topic that we can get into someday. But,
but
I'm like rambling on at the mouth again.
There's one thing though, you'd have to watch because eventually someone, you know, you'll get enough people running it. And eventually, you know, somebody will send out an email, you know, to do such and such, run this command, and it'll be RM minus RF star or something like that.
Right.
And somebody is going to figure out, oh, I have to do that. So they'll log in as root because, you know, they own the computer.
Yes.
And they'll do that because they just don't realize what that, you know, what that command does.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And eventually this will happen.
But that's not an automatic kind of virus.
No,
that's stupid. You know what I mean? That's a personal stupid moment. We have all had personally stupid moments. I have them frequently.
I was going to say.
You know? But that's something that you can learn from and not repeat. If it's an automatic virus, like, you know, they're getting really clever at hiding some of these things in emails. You know what I mean? If it's an automatic virus and your computer just thinks that, you know, it has permission to execute these things arbitrarily, it can do that without you knowing and being able to intervene.
Yes.
You know? And that's kind of the thing you have to worry about. I mean, if someone tells you, you know, log in as root and type in cd space forward slash and then do rm dash rf and an asterisk and hit enter, and they do it, they're going to know never do that again. You know what I mean? Not only will they know not to ever do that again, but they probably afterwards will go looking for the man page to find out exactly what that RM thing is. You know,
people are going to get so used to using, you know, the GUI on there. They're not going to.
Yep.
I mean, I'm guilty of it myself. I don't use the command line.
It's definitely cause for a learning experience, though.
Well, it is, yes.
All right, I'm grabbing that PowerPoint presentation and opening it up in OpenOffice.
Woohoo!
Yeah. I grabbed the wrong one by accident. I got the Active Directory one.
Mm-hmm.
But it allows me to tell you Microsoft's new logo.
Microsoft.
Or slogan. Oh. Sorry, not logo. Your potential, our passion.
Marketing 101.
Oh, yeah, man. All right, at least they finally got smart and dropped the where do you want to go today. Because when you run Microsoft, the only place that you want to go is away.
It's home.
You know? I want to go home. When I'm, you know, I'm Microsoft administrator. Where I want to go is sit in front of my computer that runs Linux. That's where I want to go.
Check this out, yo. All
right.
All right.
Yo.
All right. That was good.
And the Allen beatbox.
All right. So I accidentally downloaded session one, which was the Active Directory session. Now, the session one said it was 4.4 megabytes. Downloaded lickety split turned out to be 800 kilobytes. Session 2 is 0.8 megabytes. I go to download, it turns out to be 4.4 megabytes. What the heck?
Wow.
I bet they're serving these off
of IIS too, aren't they?
All right. Now, here's a question. Maybe some of you can answer this for me. I've been with the TechNet thing, and I've been checking out some of the stuff on... Good gosh. That's a loud plane. Holy mackerel. I've been checking out some of the stuff.
Jet taking off in your front yard there, man.
I've been checking out some of the stuff on Microsoft's website, and I've been noticing an extension, MS PCX, I think it is. What is an MSPCX file?
Not a clue.
It has something to do with... Oh, now I can't find one. But it's called MSPCX.
Is it media?
I don't know.
A media file?
Now I can't find one. ASP... Can you believe it? I've been looking at these. I've been clicking on them. CFM is Cold Fusion, right?
I think so, yeah.
That guy looks like Randy Plesser. MSPX. This page I'm on is called default.mspx. What is MSPX? Anybody?
Not a clue.
Who's in the chat?
I don't think anybody's in the chat.
Nobody's in the chat.
Is it MSPX?
Yeah, MSPX. Alan, look it up. I have the power. Okay, I have the PowerPoint presentation. Just download it.
The power of Google.
Well, the first one that came up is Windows Servers 2003 Home.
Okay.
That seems to be every. Actually, their pages seem to end in that.
Well, perhaps some kind of new active server protocol, kind of. It's one of those .NET things, or I don't know. Who knows?
It's interesting.
Does anybody really know what time it is?
It's a little after 10.
Does anybody really care?
Just a minute. Just a minute. I'm bringing up that PowerPoint presentation.
You're missing it. See, Alan knows. He's got the song going in his head now, you know?
Just debating whether I want to try to do the trumpet noises to that one.
I thought it was good. I thought it was clever, you know.
Yes, it was.
Alan got it.
Oh.
Dan is just, like, fixated on the Clash or something. I don't know. You know.
Okay, here we go.
It's also the Merrill Lynch index target term security stock quote.
All right, now listen up. This is how it goes, and this is off the Session 2 TechNet briefing from March 2004. Exploit timeline. Vulnerability reported. No exploit. Only Microsoft and reporting party aware of vulnerability. Patch developed. No exploit. Only Microsoft and reporting party aware of vulnerability. Security and bulletin and patch released. No exploit. Public aware of vulnerability, but exploit info not available. Patch reverse engineered. No exploit. Exploit info available, but virus worm not available. Worm virus code created. No exploit. Virus worm available, but not unleashed. Finally,
That does not compute.
Worm virus unleashed. Exploit. Virus worm unleashed infects unprotected unpatched systems. Now, going from that, this slide right here that says exploits are not released until after
Microsoft
release a patch, and the patch is reverse engineered to take advantage of the exploit.
Yes, that is what it says.
Is that the case? Is that the case, ladies and gentlemen?
In our reality or theirs?
In their reality, yes. In our reality, no.
Because, you know, we could be talking about a multi-dimensional time continuum sort of issue, you know. Where we have actual, true, real time over here on the right. And over here on the left, we have the Microsoft continuum, you know. And they're running in, like, two different Mobius loops that, like, cross in the middle somewhere.
So you don't agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that's ridiculous.
The two will only meet when we hit a tachyon pulse of the right frequency.
Right. That's ridiculous. No viruses actually exist until Microsoft releases a fix for them or a patch. There is, in another,
it obviously looks good on a chart.
In other words, there are no problems. There are no viruses or any problems until Microsoft says so. So all of you who happen to run Microsoft systems at your home, at your work, and you're getting infected by these viruses, you are not actually getting infected by viruses until Microsoft has told you you are getting infected by viruses. It's all a figment of your imagination. Please go back to your regularly scheduled program.
Shameful.
It's funny, man.
Isn't it?
It's hysteria. And the funniest part is, like, you sat in a room full of people, and they went, oh, yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
You know? that makes perfect sense to me now. Oh, man.
Dan, did you hand out Nopics at this thing?
I should have. But no, I didn't.
You should have sharpened the edges like throwing stars and just, you know, whip them at people or something.
Yeah, that's right.
It's crazy. Oh. It is crazy. Insane, insane, insane. But you know what?
What?
I got to say, Open Office is opening that presentation without a problem.
Oh, Open Office is awesome.
And you know how much that cost me?
Nothing.
You know how many exploits there are for that?
None. It's good stuff. Speaking of good stuff,
that's
though.
That's just the way it should be.
Yeah. Speaking of good stuff, we have a problem.
What's wrong?
It's we have exceeded our recommended time allotment.
Well, I think we've covered a lot today. But you know what? On a parting note, I want to once more give props to that typography for the web book by Wendy Peck.
Yeah, that's really good.
That is something. If you're at all into web development, you know, definitely. And the price, you can't beat it. $7.99 at Ollie's. There's still about 4 or 5 copies left.
Yeah.
That's on Catasauqua Road. But thank you for listening this week. Before I get completely cut off from like,
I just got a thing running in the background. We had, you know,
he wants
plenty
to get
of time
rolling.
To say our goodbyes.
I understand. Thank you, everybody, for listening this week, and all those people who are downloading. Remember, you can get that TechNet briefing and see for yourself the lies. Thank you very much. And thank you, Joe.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks, everybody else who's listening or going to listen. Appreciate you listening to us. Tell your friends.
Skanky Joe.
try very hard and join us live next week at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And try not to be drunk next week.
Yeah.
It's March 17th.
Oh, that's right. We'll have to talk in an Irish brogue. A little glass clinking going on maybe or something. All right.
So long.
Good night, everybody.
Peace out.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Pulling up link tech show. Pulling up link tech show. Pulling up link tech show. Pulling up link tech show.